David, I am a class Shyamarani Didi, August
21st. Nityalila Pravishna Om Vishnupad Astotara Satashri Shrimad Srila Bhakti Vedanta Swami Prabhupada, and the same unlimited obeisances in the dust of the lotus feet of my most worshipable Shiksha Gurudev. Nityalila Pravishna Om Vishnupad Astotara Satashri Shrimad Srila Bhakti Vedanta Narayan Goswami Maharaj. To all of our disciple succession and all the assembled devotees. So, Achyuta Krishna Prabhu, before I begin, you have our telephone number, so you'll call me if when we get cut off, and then we can see what we can do to restart. Okay. So. Okay, so yesterday we were discussing chapter 8, the setting of the scene is Sri Gaura Harida in Navadvip, and those Vaishnavas had invited the Vaishnavas from Godrumdvip, who we all know from the first 7 chapters, that is Paramahamsa Babaji and his associates Vaishnava Das, Vihiri Mahasaya, and so many others. From Pradumna Kunj in Godrumdvip. They were invited for prasadam, and then other guests came from Badagati. And one of the devotees from that group from Badagati had asked, "What I understand that Vaishnava Dharma is the eternal Dharma, the Jiva Dharma, Nitya Dharma, Prem Dharma, Sanatan Dharma of the soul. So what is the dealings of Vaishnavas with others?" And then it was decided that Haridas Babaji, who is the oldest, the most senior amongst all the Vaishnavas from Sri Gaura Harida, who is about 100 years old, they all voted for him to answer the question. And he began by explaining the 10 types of moral behavior and saying that Vaishnava behavior is beyond this. Vaishnava behavior is Nitya Dharma, as Vaishnava Dharma is Nitya Dharma. And there are 3 kinds of Vaishnavas, and they deal with others according to their own adhikar, in relation to others according to their adhikar. In other words, the Kanista adhikar, the lowest or neophyte, bald devotee, like a baby devotee, he doesn't know how to recognize who is anybody else and how to respect them. So these rules of Vaishnava behavior can't apply to them. They should, but they cannot. So then he describes the Madhyama adhikar, and how he relates to others in 4 kinds of ways. he relates to Krishna in prem, not the prem of a prem that's beyond bhav, but prem up to his level of madhyama. Could be ashakti, could be going into bhava bhakti. And he serves Vaishnavas according to the capacity of the Vaishnavas. He surrenders himself fully to the Uttam Vaishnava. He's friendly to those on his level. He instructs those madhyamas who are subordinate to him. He shows mercy to those who are ignorant and foolish but not envious. And he neglects those who are envious. So, in the meantime, Nityananda Prabhu, who is the Nityananda Das, who is the young Vaishnava inquirer, he's asking, can you please tell me which one I am of these three? And Haridas asks Vaishnava Das, who you know from the previous seven chapters, who used to be Sannyasi Thakur, who was transformed by Paramahamsa Babaji. He said, I think because of the story that he gave us about himself, I would say he's a Madhyamadakari. And Haridas Babaji said that's what I would propose also. Then Nityananda Das was so grateful and he said, now please give me mercy that I can become, how I can become an Uttamadakari. So I think that's where we're beginning today. At that point, Nityananda Das put his head at the feet of Haridas Babaji in gratitude, and Haridas immediately became emotional and got up from his seat. He sat down Nityananda Das beside him and started patting his back. So Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur marks how extraordinary is the touch of a pure Vaishnava. That when Haridas touched him, and he touched Haridas, Nityananda had shed tears from his eyes, and Haridas, although he tried to control it, where's mine? He also shed tears from his eyes. Then all the Vaishnavas, that is from Bharagati, from Sri Gaura Hrida and from Godrum, they all shed uncontrollable tears. And then Nityananda, when his tears subsided, he asked, what are the Kaniska Adhikari's primary and secondary characteristics? And Haridas replied, the primary characteristic is worship of the deity in faith. And what kind of faith? Faith in the reality of the form of Krishna, that that form is not imaginary, illusory, or temporary, but it is the reality. And the secondary characteristic of a Kanista is Shravanam Kirtanam Vishnu Smaranam, that is engaging in, as far as possible, the nine processes of devotional service. So Nityananda Das asked, but I don't understand, because hearing, chanting, and remembering are like the main limbs of bhakti. So why would they be the secondary characteristics of the Kanista Adhikari? So Haridas replied, because for him it's secondary, because they're not really limbs of bhakti yet for him, because his performance of them is under the modes of nature. Just like suppose I'm very angry at somebody and I want to take revenge. This is like really in the mode of ignorance. So I'll chant Hare Krishna in order to get power to revenge, or good intelligence to revenge. A little better than that is I hate my anger, it's too much suffering. So I chant Hare Krishna to get free from anger. So his hearing, chanting, remembering, or just relief from suffering in general, is within the modes of nature, so they can't actually be called angas of bhakti for him. He's collecting sukriti. And when he becomes nirgun, when he's into the madhyama adhikari stage, then they're considered as limbs of bhakti and they become primary. Then Nityananda Das asked, well, how can a Kanistha Adhikari develop these symptoms of Anyavilashita Sunyam? As we discussed yesterday, Jiva Dharma, the entire 900 or so pages of Jiva Dharma, is nothing but an explanation of Srila Rupa Goswami's verse, Anyavilashita Sunyam Jnana Karmadi Anavritam Anakulyena Krishnana Silanam Bhakti Uttamam. That the definition of Uttam or pure bhakti is the unbroken flow of activities performed by the body, mind, words, and spiritual sentiments for the sole purpose of giving pleasure to Krishna. And it is not covered by speculation, fruitive activities, yogic powers, or anything else. So this Nityananda Das asked, how can a Kanistha Adhikari come up to the level of Uttama Bhakti? Or Anyavilashita. Anyavilashita begins in sadhan, then it comes to bhav, then it comes to frame. It's not totally pure or complete in sadhan, of course. It's a semblance of Anyavilashita. But in sadhan bhakti, the only desire to is of the devotee and his practices is to reach bhav. And therefore, his activities are called sadhan. Before that, they're called sadhan abhas, or a shadow of sadhan. So Nityananda is asking, how can a Kanistha Adhikari come to the point of real sadhan bhakti? And then Haridas answers, as he develops his shraddha, faith in the association of devotees, then he becomes eligible for real bhakti. And then Nityananda Das asks, well, when is it real bhakti? And Haridas replies, Shuddha bhakti comes at the time of Madhyama Adhikari. And at that time, his activities and his desires are not covered by karma or jnana. He only wants Ananya bhakti. He has taste for Vaishnava Seva, and his activities are favorable to Krishna's satisfaction. The nice thing about Vedic culture and Varnashram Dharma, though it's not Nitya Dharma, is that it learns to treat guests very honorably. So if a Vaishnava happens to come as a guest, and they treat him honorably and hear from him, then they gradually become purified. Then Nityananda does request. So Shuddha Bhakti, pure bhakti, which begins with Madhyama Adhikari, comes along with Sambandha Gyan. What exactly is Sambandha Gyan? So Haridas replies, it's free from the contamination of Mayavad philosophy. Mayavad philosophy has no interest in any relationship with Krishna, because they don't believe really in the form of Krishna. They think it's imaginary, and that ultimately they will become that undifferentiated, qualityless, all-pervading God. So Sambandha Gyan is understanding one's relationship with the Supreme Lord. We just do our duty. And Prabhupada once said, my duty is to offer you Krishna consciousness, and the rest is your duty, but if I've done my duty, then my duty is complete. We just sent one devotee to get another devotee who wasn't here, and she couldn't find her. So then I said, well, we've done our duty, so it's okay. So then Nityananda Das asked, well, how long does that take to come to the level of Madhyama and develop Sambandha Gyan? And Haridas replies, that depends on one's sukritis and sanskars. How many millions of births, and in what kind of association his previous activities were performed. Then Nityananda Das asks, well, what is the first result of Sukriti? And Haridas replies, the first result of Sukriti is that you get sadhu sangha. And then he quotes the verse, Satam prasangam mamavirya sambhido. Bhavanti hrikarna rasayana katha. Tato chanat aswapada. Wait, let me find that. I have to go back to the page because I forgot it. Page 199. Satam prasangam mamavirya sambhido. Bhavanti hrikarna rasayana katha. Tachyoshanatasvapavargavarmani Shadharatirbhaktiranukhamishyati. This should be one of our verses today, and it's going to be my verse too, so that I can get it right. Just say it several times, learn the word-for-word meaning, which you can get from Prabhupada's Bhagavatam 325.25. Say it to at least five people. Doesn't matter if you blunder, just keep learning it. And then say it before you take prasadam, while you're taking prasadam, before you go to sleep, when you wake up in the morning. And then keep saying it once every day. So, the first result is sadhusanga, and by that sadhusanga, and hearing about the glories of Krishna, one's anarthas disappear and one quickly advances on the path from shraddha or sadhan bhakti to from shraddha to sadhan to bhav to praying. Then Nityananda Prabhu asks, well, how can you get sadhusanga? Which is like a circular question, because he just asked, what's the result of Sukriti? And then he said, you get sadhusanga. Then he said, how do you get sadhusanga? So now the answer is Sukriti. Then Nityananda asks, so by sadhusanga, the Kanista Adhikari worships the deity. So how can one say that there's no Vaishnava Seva in the Kanista's worship of the deity if it's only through sadhusanga that he was able to start worshipping the deity? So Haridas replied that that is a fact, but still, in order for deity worship to be complete, the deity has to be pleased by actual direct Vaishnava Seva. Then the deity is pleased. It's described in Kapila Dev's teachings of the Bhagavatam, that if one worships the deity, but he doesn't show compassion to all living beings, which he can only do under the guidance of sadhus and Vaishnava Seva, then his worship of the deity is like doing a fire sacrifice by throwing the grains into the ashes instead of the fire. It doesn't really have so much effect. It doesn't have effect. But he advances as he gets sadhusanga. Then Nityananda Das asks, what are the stages of progress of the Kanista? So Haridas replies, as I mentioned earlier, suppose he knows, a Kanista knows, anyone in Vedic culture and Varnashram Dharma knows that you honor guests like God. So if you do that with a Vaishnava happens to come to your house, invited, uninvited, then you serve him because you serve your guests, then you get unknown Sukriti. You hear from him, you see him, just seeing his body is purifying. Then you can see, because of how pure he is, you can get to see how contaminated you are by comparison. And then the coverings of material desires start going away. And you study under him. You hear Krishna's pastimes under him. And he teaches you how to develop sambandhagyan. What is your relationship? Just like when Gurudev gives the Gayatri Mantra, he says, so from now on you should think of yourself as such and such. And you should think of Krishna as your such and such. I won't say it over the phone because I don't know who's on the phone. Nityananda Das then asked, I'm sorry, Haridas says, if you don't have the sadhusanga, if you have bad association, oh, I remember, Nityananda Das asks, what will make a Kanista not progress? You've already answered, how will progress? What will make him not progress? So Haridas replies, if he has kusanga, or bad association, then he can stay in the same place or he can get worse. And then Nityananda asks, well, what's the most rapid way? And Haridas Thakur, there's only one rapid way, and that is sadhusanga. Sadhusanga, sadhusanga, sarva shastrakoi, lava matra, sadhusanga, sarva siddhi koi. All the shastras say that by 1/11th of a second of sadhusanga, real sadhusanga, one can attain all perfection. And then Tinanda asks, what about the Kanista's pious and impious activities? So Haridas replies, both of them become less and less as he advances. He has less and less consideration of pious and impious, and his consideration becomes Vaishnava or not Vaishnava. Then Nityananda Das asks, now I understand by your causeless mercy. Please tell me now, what are the principal symptoms of a Madhyama Adhikari? So Haridas Thakur Haridas Babaji replies, he honors devotees. He doesn't commit any offenses in chanting. His chanting is the beginning of Shuddhanam. That is, it's not Shuddhanam, it's mixed with Namabhas. And he has four different relationships, depending on four different kinds of personalities. God, the pure devotee, the regular devotee, innocent, foolish, and the demon. Then Nityananda Das asks, well, what are the secondary characteristics of the Madhyama Adhikari? And Haridas replies, he's surrendered to Krishna's will. He doesn't act independently and he doesn't have independent desires. Does that mean, Nityananda Das asks, does that mean that he's free from sins and offenses? So Haridas replies, in the beginning, he still has some sins and offenses. But later on, he becomes free. Because at the beginning,
is that him?
At the beginning of Madhyama Adhikari, it's still Kanista Madhyama. Or Madhyama Kanista. So, yes. Okay, continue. And Nityananda then asks, well, what about his activities being covered by karma and gyan, or desire for fruitive results? That is, I want to distribute a lot of books so I can be the number one distributor and get the greatest drum roll and everybody will appreciate me as the best devotee. Or, as Nityananda said about his own self, I desire to roll in ecstasy and weep so that I can be honored. So that's karma, and jnana means I want to merge with the impersonal Brahmajyoti. And then again, Haridas replies, well, in the beginning it's like that, but as he develops, it's not like that at all. Manjari, could you look for the example of the chickpeas? There's an analogy of the chickpeas which I forgot. Then Nityananda Das asks, well, how can a Madhyama Adhikari actually desire to live? How can he stand living in the material world? So then Haridas replied, these are all kinds of questions. We're so lucky that all these questions that anybody could possibly think of asking, and even what we can't possibly think of asking, are asked by these very kind devotees and very kind demons also in other chapters, as you'll see. In chapter 9, such a great demon, Digambara, the childhood friend of Lahiri Mahasaya, Oh my goodness, what a great demon. We'll hear all about his craziness in the next chapter. So we hear all kinds of questions that even our mind, like suppose I don't want to live because I find material life too bad. So then I superimpose that on the Madhyama Adhikara. I think he's just like me. But then Haridas replies, he has no desire to live, he has no desire to die, because he has no independent desire. He doesn't desire liberation, he only desires to do bhajan. All of his desires are Krishna's desires. So now Nityananda Das said, I understand, you're so merciful. And now I would like to hear from you about the secondary characteristics of the Uttam Vaishnava. So Haridas replies, all of the Uttam Vaishnava's activities come under the umbrella of his own frame. There's absolutely no influence of the modes of nature. And then Nityananda does ask, can an Uttama be a householder, or can a householder also be an Uttama? Just like Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur is a householder and an Uttama. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, so many of his associates. Nityananda Das asked, I'm sorry, Haridas replied, yes, Mahaprabhu's associates, Rai Ramananda, he's also Uttama. And then Nityananda Das again questions. So, the Uttama Grihastha, if an Uttama is a Grihastha and a Madhyama is a Sannyasi, how do they behave towards each other? Because the original question of this chapter is how do Vaishnavas deal with each other, with others, with everybody? So, Haridas replies, whoever is more advanced, both the Madhyama and the Uttama, will be able to know their own position and the other person's position. So according to who's more advanced, they will act with each other. And then Nityananda asks, can he hold festivals and invite many Vaishnavas? So Haridas replies, did you find what you said?
Yeah.
Okay, we're going to find out because previously Haridas was telling that in the beginning the Madhyama Adhikari has some sins and offenses, but gradually they disappear, and the analogy is given with the chickpea.
It says, whatever sins or offenses are still present in the beginning of the Madhyama stage are like chickpeas that are just about to be ground to a pulp. They're still small enough, but within a few seconds they'll be
pulled. Oh, right. When you grind chickpeas into powder, as you're grinding them, there's still a few little lumps left. But because the grinding process is going on, very soon they'll turn into powder. So all the sins and offenses very quickly for a Madhyama turn into powder. So now back to our point here. Haridas is replying to Nityananda's question about holding festivals and inviting many Vaishnavas. So Haridas replies, it really depends on one's mood. If you do it in a pompous way, just for honor and just to show off, then that's not going to help your bhakti. But if it's done actually to please the Vaishnavas and inviting pure Vaishnavas, then you make advancement. And a Kanistha can't really tell who's a pure Vaishnava, but a Madhyama can. And he's stressing that one should honor one, not according to who's my friend, who's my relative, but who is actually a Vaishnava. I remember about 8 years ago, about 4 or 5 years ago, in Alachua, when Gurudev was there, one of my godbrothers told Gurudev there was a meeting just for Prabhupada's disciples so they could ask their particular questions. And my godbrother asked, a friend of mine is a member of an institution. He's a big person in a certain in spiritual institution. And I know that he's against you and he twists the philosophy around, but still he's my friend. And I can't give up that friendship. So therefore I associate with him. So Gurudev said, don't make friendship on the basis of your material considerations, but rather on the basis of who's a devotee and how much of a devotee is he. So he was saying that was a bogus consideration, a friend. Because that friend can kill me. So Haridas is stressing honor to Vaishnavas. And also remember Trinadati Sunichina. This is the main qualification for chanting pure names. To honor all according to their capacity, to not desire any honor for oneself. And then Nityananda Das asks, well, how can one become free from false pride? And Haridas replies, then you have to be free from material designation. I am a Brahmin. I am intelligent. I can memorize so many verses. I am the best at this or that. Don't think I'm any designation. Rather, I'm insignificant, I'm destitute, I'm worthless. Then you can be free from pride. So Nityananda confirms. So you're saying that bhakti depends on... Does bhakti devi depend on humility? And Haridas replies, bhakti is independent. Bhakti is a person, and she's completely independent. Real humility is included within bhakti. If one has bhakti, automatically he's humble. Otherwise, he can't be truly humble. So one should think, I'm nothing. Krishna is my all in all. What is bhakti? It's the tenderness of heart towards Krishna. Very, very high thing. And because of the tenderness of heart towards Krishna, because Krishna is the root of the tree, and all the jivas are the leaves and the branches, the tenderness of heart towards the jiva in terms of compassion and helping them in their bhakti, that is the meaning of compassion. Within bhakti, to have a tenderness of heart towards the jivas. And also to be forgiving. Who am I not to forgive somebody for my conception of somebody's abuse towards me? I'm so wretched. Nobody even knows how to abuse me, as I should be abused. Why should I hurt anybody else? Even if I'm feeling hurt, I deserve more hurt than I'm getting. Then Nityananda Das asks, how does a Vaishnava act? Because that's the whole chapter. Vaishnava's behavior towards others. How does a Vaishnava act towards other religions? So Haridas replied, he never slanders anybody. He's very peaceful. He worships Lord Narayan. He doesn't criticize anybody else. You should know that there's no dharma except for Vaishnava dharma. And other religions are just part of a staircase to Vaishnava dharma. Or they're distortions of Vaishnava dharma. He quotes this verse, Srimad Bhagavatam 1:2:26. Which is the definition of real religion. Can you find the page? He's respectful to everybody according to their level. He has no malice to the distorted religions, but he doesn't waste his time in them. Okay, my husband and I have a pact. He'll come with me to the temple and worship Krishna, and I'll go with him to church and hear from the pastors how Jesus is freeing me from all sins. I don't have to waste my time. Although, just if it's going to create disturbance with my husband, I may go, but then I'll chant Hare Krishna while I'm there. I won't actually participate. What page is that?
206.
I'm going to quote the verse on page 206, if you have the books with you. Narayana Kalashanta Bhajanti Yana Suyava. Those who are free from the propensity to slander others and who are fully peaceful worship only Narayan and his plenary portions. So that is the real religion. So Nityananda then asked, and this comes to the close of the chapter, is it our duty to preach then to other religions? Or should we just like tolerate and not be malice and just, okay, whatever. I'm okay, you're okay. So Haridas said, yes, it's our duty to preach. Mahaprabhu said in the Adi-lila chapter 7, you should dance and sing and preach. I order everyone in the world to distribute the fruits of praying. But don't preach to the inimical, because then it's a waste of time, and that will create obstacles in your own bhakti. It takes more energy to preach to one who's inimical than to preach to many, many, many innocents and be able to convince them. You'll see in the next chapter, Vihiri Mahasaya meets his old friend, Digambara, and he doesn't waste his time trying to convince him. He tells him what the truth is, but he speaks to him just to get his friend angry so he'll leave, so he doesn't have to be bothered with him. Then Nityananda was so grateful that he rolled on the ground in love at the feet of his new guru, Haridas Babaji Mahasaya. He said, we don't give Harinam to those who are inimical because it will create obstacles in our own bhakti. In other words, don't not tell them to chant, but he was saying that a Vaishnava won't seriously spend time with an inimical person. Then all the Vaishnavas began a loud kirtan and offered their obeisances to Haridas. The meeting was thus ended, and everybody returned home. Thus ends chapter 8, and now we're beginning chapter 9. So chapter 9 begins with the glorification of Lahiri Mahasaya. You all remember Lahiri Mahasaya. He used to be a professional kirtaniya, and he used to sing with so much alap, that is, Hare, Hare, Hare. It sounded very beautiful, but you didn't exactly know what he was chanting. And if you weren't a Vaishnava, you'd appreciate it. And if you were a Vaishnava, you wouldn't be able to tolerate it. There was no bhava in it. And then he came and asked questions to the Vaishnavas 3 or 4 years ago in Godrum. How come you Vaishnavas are opposed to the Nitya Dharma of the Brahmanas activities of Sandhya Vandana? Since that question and the beautiful answers he got and the association with Premdas Babaji and especially his Gurudev Vaishnava Das, he became a pure devotee. So much so that he wrote songs that are so full of love that the Vaishnavas from Godrum began singing those as bona fide kirtans, and they felt love in their heart by singing those kirtans. So the beginning of chapter 9, it opens with a glorification of Lahiridas Babaji, that he'd been with the the Vaishnavas in Godrum for about 3 or 4 years. Now he was wearing very simple clothes. How simple? He would take a piece of cloth, rip it into four, and make a door open and what do you call that, lungi and upper garments. Never wore shoes. When he was eating, just before sleeping, just after waking, while sitting, all the time, he would be chanting Harinam. All of his caste pride that I am a smart Brahmin, I know all the Shastras, I know Nitya Shastra, all finished. He would always seek out the Vaishnavas so that he could take the remnants of their prasadam. Not like us. Oh yes, I can't wait to get the remnants of the Vaishnavas prasadam. Of dal, rice, malpur, samosas. But not like that. He didn't care about the taste of the prasadam, but he tasted Krishna in the prasadam and the Vaishnava's mercy in the prasadam. Now he understood the Vaishnava philosophy, that renunciation is not an external thing that you show off by wearing dorkopa and lungi, but inside. He was actually now a follower of Sanatana Goswami, and that's why he wore, just like Sanatana Goswami, ripped the cloth of Tapan Misra, or Chandrasekhar, and just wore an old piece of torn cloth. But he still wore Brahman thread, and he followed, you know, in the Nectar of Instruction, Satovrate is one of the six principles that makes us advance in bhakti, that is following the previous acharyas and how they do bhajan and how they live. So he was following Raghunath Das Goswami and Sanatana Goswami. Raghunath Das Goswami refused to take any money from his family, and so did Lahiri Masaya, although they would offer it. And once his eldest son offered him 100 rupees just for a festival for the Vaishnavas, and still he refused to take it. So now, he met with Paramahansa Babaji, and Paramahansa Babaji was so pleased with him. He said, now you're ready. Now you're ready for a new name. Because you were a resident of Shantipur, where Advaita Acharya lived, now I'm giving you the name Advaita Das. And from then on, all the Vaishnavas called him Advaita Das, and they called his bhajan kutir Advaita Kutir. Now isn't that interesting that our present acharyas, like Prabhupada, Gurudev and others, they give us initiation when we're grossly foolish, ignorant and sinful, and give us a new name. That's just to remind us, to help us. But here the new name came, and we also get the Vaishnava dress, even when we're sinful. Even sannyasis get sannyas dress, even being sinful, as a chance, as an opportunity. But that's the mercy of our present acharyas, to help us along. So, now that he's a Advaita Acharya, his childhood friend, Digambara Chattopadhyaya, was very rich, and he was in the service for many years, had been in the service of the Muslim administration. But now he was old, so he was retired. And he was living in Ambika. And there he heard about the new renunciation of his old childhood friend, Lahiri Mahasaya. And he became very, very disturbed that his old friend had ruined his life. Because this Digambara Chattopadhyaya, he was an ardent worshipper of Durga. And anytime he would just hear the name of Vaishnava, he would block his ears. So now he had heard about the fall down of his old friend who fell down into Vaishnavism. So he immediately ordered his servant, please arrange a boat. I'm immediately going to my friend. So we took a boat, and it took about 6 hours to get there. And he had a lot of, you know, material qualifications. He was a great scholar in the Tantra Shastra. Because he was in the service of the Muslims, he knew Farsi and Arabic. He even defeated the Muslim scholars and even the Brahmanas. He wrote a book called the Tantra Sangraha. He was famous in Delhi and Lucknow and many cities. So he took some people with him, and he sent an intelligent man. When they arrived in Godrum, he sent an intelligent man, one of his associates, first, before he went. He sent him to the kutir of Lahari Mansaya. So Lahari Mansaya was in the middle of doing his Harinam. And he said, "Who are you? Why have you come?" So the man said, "I was sent by Digambara Chattopadhyaya. He wants to know, have you forgotten your old childhood friend?" So Advaita Das said, "How could I forget him? He's my old friend. Where is he? Has he become a Vaishnava now?" So the man said, "He's in the boat at the shore, but whether he's a Vaishnava or not, I don't know." So then Advaita said, "Well, why hasn't he come here?" So then he came 1 hour later. Everything's slow when you don't have rickshaws and airplanes and all those kind of things. So an hour later he arrived, that is, Digambara arrived, with a few others. And first he expressed great joy at seeing his old friend. They embraced, and then Digambara sang his song in worship of Kali, and you won't believe his song. "O Kali, you're the source of Brahma, Vishnu, and Shiva. By your power, the material world is created and destroyed. This material nature is your potency." It's really amazing. And because they worship Durga, you should see, and you will see, as the chapter unfolds, what it means to be a worshiper of Durga, how demoniac and perverse the whole thing is. And the interesting thing is, Kali's not even interested in that worship, because she's a pure devotee of Krishna. So then Advaita Das said, he immediately offered him a seat of leaves. Then he said, "Come in, brother, come in. We haven't seen each other in so long." And then Digambara immediately began. First, he began nicely, with tears. He sat down, very affectionate, and immediately started blaspheming him. He said, "My dear brother Kalidas," because that was his name before, Kalidas, because he was also a worshipper of Durga, "now you become a renunciate. You have no care for the demigods or goddesses. You've given up your religious duties. All of our friends have passed on. So my only hope was our friendship. Only you and me are left. Everybody else has died. So I was hoping that you and I could sometimes visit each other, you from Shantipur, me from Ambika. We could study the tantras together. We could sing the glorification of Kali together. But look at you. I see that you've become as worthless as cow dung. There's no use to your life, either this life or your next life." So at that very moment, Advaita Das thought, "I have to get rid of this guy." But he said to him out loud, "Oh yes, do you remember in Ambika, a long time ago when we were young, and we were playing Gully Dulla, and I don't know what that game means, maybe
Gully
somebody
Danda,
else.
Gully Danda.
Huh?
Gully Danda.
Gully Danda, what does it mean?
Stick and a long stick with small
Oh,
stick.
The ball?
No, no. It is a long stick and a small stick with corners. Small sticks with corners.
Oh, it's a game of sticks with corners. We just heard from Gadadhar Prabhu. So we were playing this game, and we reached a tamarind tree. And Digambara said, "Yes, I remember. We were near, that tree was near Goridas Pandit's house, and Gornatai used to sit there." And then Advaita Das said, yes. And do you remember that you said to me, don't touch that tree. Sachi's son, Nitai, used to sit under that tree. If you touch that tree, you'll become a renunciate. So Digambara said, yes. I saw your inclination towards Vaishnavism at that time. So I said, if you touch that tree, you'll fall into Gaura's trap. So then Advaita Das said, well, yeah, before I was on the verge of falling, but now I'm totally in the trap, in Gaura's trap. So then Digambara said, well, look, just take my hand and I'll lift you out of the trap. I'll save you. So Advaita Das said, no thanks, I'm happy in the trap. And my only desire is that I can stay in this trap forever. If you'll touch the trap, then you'll see how wonderful it is. So Digambara said, no thank you. There's happiness in that trap only in the beginning, but then you'll find that it's total deception. And Advaita Das said, actually, you yourself were in the trap of delusion, not me. And Digambara said, no, I'm very happy now, and I will be happy in the future. You yourself, Kalidas, you don't even look happy. And later on, you're going to have so much suffering. We enjoy meat and fish. And we are well-dressed. We're more civilized than the Vaishnavas. You Vaishnavas don't have any civility at all. We derive our happiness from material science. Whereas you Vaishnavas are deprived, and also you'll never be delivered. You're deprived now and your future is black. And so Advaita said, why do you say I'll not be delivered? So Digambara said, even, get this one. Okay, is everybody ready for this one? Digambara said, even Brahma, Vishnu, and Shiva will get no deliverance if they are indifferent to Mother Durga. She is the primordial power. She manifests Brahma, Vishnu, and Shiva. She maintains them. She maintains the universes. And all these three, Brahma, Vishnu, and Shiva, and the material world, all enter into her womb. Then Advaita Das asked, is she conscious or inert? So he replied, she's consciousness personified. Welcome. For those who just came in, we're discussing the ninth chapter of Jivadharma. Discussion between Lahiri Mahasaya, who's now initiated as Advaita Das, not just initiated, but just got his new name, and his old childhood friend who's quite a demon, named Digambara Chattopadhyaya, who's a Durga worshipper. So, he said, Digambara replied, she is consciousness personified. She is the independent spiritual creator of everything. Everything comes by her will. So Advaita Das asked, then tell me, what is Purusha, spirit, and what is Prakriti, matter? So Digambara replied, oh, all you Vaishnavas know how to do is bhajan. You don't have any philosophical acumen at all. Purusha and Prakriti are like half of a chickpea. They're each half of a chickpea. That is, you know a chickpea? It looks like one thing, but if you take off the skin, then you see inside there's like two pieces. So they are two, Purusha and Prakriti are two, spirit and matter, but in the skin, they're one. Purusha is conscious and Prakriti is inert. They merge, later on, they merge and become the undifferentiated Brahma. Can you imagine what a distorted philosophy it's amazing? Then Advaita Das said, is your mother, that is Mother Durga, is your mother Prakriti or Purusha, female or male? So Digambara replied, sometimes she's male, sometimes she's female. Because after all, according to him, she manifests Krishna. Then Advaita Das said, well, in the two halves of the chitti, which is the mother and which is the father? So Digambara said, oh, I see, you're asking a philosophical question. Excellent. Mother is Prakriti and father is Purusha. So Advaita Das said, okay, well, who are you? So Digambara says, well, I'm the jiva, and when I'm bound by Maya, I'm a jiva. I'm not always a jiva. Bound by Maya, I'm a jiva. But when I become released from Maya, then I become Lord Sadashiva. Isn't that weird? It's just like, you know, you go down Roy Bazaar or something in Vrindavan and you see Sadashiva Ironing Company and Rupa Hairstyles and Krishna Fashions. So it's all the same words but applied differently. So then Advaita Das asked, well, are you spirit or matter? And Digambara said, well, I'm spirit, and my mother is matter. But when I'm bound, she's the mother. And when I get liberated, she becomes my wife. See, because I become Sadashiva. That's like, I remember when I was just joining Prabhupada in 1966, he was telling us all about this Mayavada philosophy. Well, this is like Mayavada mixed with other things, with Durga worship. But he said, it's a brand of Mayavada. So Prabhupada was saying that they think that it's like Brahma is the whole space, outer space. And you take a cup, and you run that cup through the space, and then put your hand over the cup, or put a lid on the cup. And the cup, the outside of the cup, is the jiva, who has the misconception that I'm an individual. And when you break the cup, then what's inside, that inside space, merges with the outside space and becomes Brahma, the undifferentiated, all-pervading quality of Brahma. So that sounds like this, a little bit. So Advaita Das said, splendid! Now the truth is revealed. Your mother becomes your wife. What kind of philosophy is this? So Digambara says, brother, we Durga worshippers are not like you Vaishnavas, just wandering here and there shouting out, Vaishnava, Vaishnava. I've learned from many perfected beings, from sannyasis, brahmacharis, from studying from tantrikas, that is those who are expert in the tantras, and I've studied the tantras myself, day and night. Actually, I can help you learn the tantras. I can help you learn philosophy. So Advaita Das said, well, first he was thinking, oh my God, what a misfortune that would be. But aloud he said, okay then, please explain to me, what is material science and civilization? Now we can see how the Durga worshippers think. What is material civilization and material science? So Digambara replied, civilization means, and you can probably relate it to the materialists that you know, and I can relate it to myself. Civilization means speak politely in a cultured society, dress respectably in a pleasing manner, don't conduct yourself in such a way that it will be repugnant to others. But you, Vaishnavas, you do none of this. And Advaita Das said, why do you say that? So Digambara said, you're not at all social, you don't mix with anybody, you don't have sweet words for anybody when you meet them, you just say, Chan Hari Nam, Chan Hari Nam. I remember once I was on a morning walk with Prabhupada in Boston, 1968 or 69, and as we were walking, just a few of us, like 3, 4, 5, and Prabhupada said that when Lord Chaitanya would chant, the children, some of the children would make fun of him and go, in a sarcastic way. So Lord Chaitanya would cover his ears and he would say, "Don't chant that Hare Krishna again," just so they would say it more. He gets the greedy. So similarly, this Digambar is being sarcastic. So he said, "So you people just say, chant Hare Nam. Don't you see any other kind of civilized discussion that anybody can have except chant Hare Nam? Whoever sees you will not want to have you in their assembly. You just wear a loincloth, this thing of hair on the middle of your head. You wear a garland of beads. What a weird outfit you people have. You eat only potatoes and roots, and you're not at all civilized." So Advaita Das said, actually, first he was thinking, he really wanted to just get into a quarrel so the other guy would get angry and leave. Remember in the last chapter it was how Vaishnavas behave towards others? So now we're seeing how he's behaving towards the demons. He's asking out loud, "Does your civilization give a higher next life?" So then the Gambara said, "Well, politeness and culture in and of itself doesn't grant a higher life, but without culture, society can't become elevated. And in an elevated society, then you can have, you can go to heavenly planets." So Advaita Das said, "Brother, can I just say something and you won't be dissatisfied with me?" So Digambara said, "You're my childhood friend. I would give my life for you. How could I ever be angry with what you say? And even if I was angry, my words would be very sweet because after all, I'm civilized. You can just feel free to say anything that you want. Because in civilization, we hide our feelings. So even if I was angry, I wouldn't express my feelings." Hello? And then Lord Chaitanya said, "Okay, here's our Vaishnava meaning of civilization. Your civilization. Your civilization is equal to deception. It's not honest. Your sweet words just to please others on the outside, but inside you're full of wicked deeds. Really, simplicity is the path of truth. That is not being dishonest or hypocritical. And what is the truth? To worship Hari. Truthfulness and simplicity are the only good qualities. Modern civilization means being depraved and keeping that depravity hidden within your heart. The only real civilization is Vaishnava civilization. The literal meaning of civilization in Sanskrit is sabha, and I forget the last part of the word. And that means to be in an assembly, to act in an assembly, to be free from sin and deception. So non-Vaishnava civilization is saturated with sin. So it's not civilization. It's not the Nitya Dharma, the eternal religion of the Jiva. In fact, this Digambara and the Durga worshippers, they don't even believe in the eternality of the Jiva. I'm only a Jiva when I'm bound. Okay, Achyuta, Krishna Prabhu? It's 10 after 8 my time, 10 after 10 your time. Should we continue for another some minutes, or should we end here and resume tomorrow? Maybe there's a couple of questions. Yeah, we haven't had any questions lately. Does anybody have any questions? It's what? 14? Yeah, okay, it's quite late. You guys gotta get to rest. Yes. Yes. Yes, who's this? Who? Padabji Prabhu, then invites you. Yeah. Can you speak a little louder? Can you speak a little louder? Yes. Well, Gurudev gave that analogy this year in Badger. Well, he was talking about the 24 gurus. This year in Badger, oh, the question is, for those who are sitting here in the room, the question is that yesterday we mentioned about the Gurudev's discussion in Badger about the young girl with a lot of bracelets, and she kept breaking her bracelets so that she would only wear one bracelet on each arm, so that the people who came to her house to see if she was qualified to marry their son, so that they wouldn't realize that she was poor and she had to thresh rice. She had to herself take the rice out of the paddy, which showed that she was poor. So first she had a lot of bangles on, and the bangles were all jingling. Then she thought that now they'll realize what kind of work I'm doing. So she took off all the bangles but four, but still they were clanging. So then she broke the last two, so there are only two bangles, one on each hand, and so they didn't jingle. So this year, Gurudev was explaining it in such a way that she's one of the 24 gurus. So she's teaching, as soon as you have a lot of people together, like the bangles, they'll quarrel. So it's better to be undisturbed and do your bhajan alone. The year before, he also said this was the case, but he gave an additional thing that she was teaching, which is that if you have to associate with non-devotees or those who are not favorable to your bhakti, just associate in a very external, social way, only as much as necessary. Don't get into any spiritual topics with them because it will just disturb your bhakti. Just be quick and superficial. Polite and all that, but just as much as necessary. Is that clear? Okay, sorry. Oh my. Any other questions? I think it's late for everybody. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Thursday is the last day. And then what happens? How long do you want to wait between one set of classes and another? It doesn't matter to me, whenever you want. I can go on every day except when Gurudev's holding some holy day festival. Or if I die. What? digest. Okay. It's 10:45 where you are? That's my Pankaj Prabhu. Wow, that's terrible. You have to go to work tomorrow. Well, that means that should be 6:00 my time? Okay, we'll work it out. Well, when should we have a change of time right away? Or what, Achyuta? Yeah. Okay, so tomorrow should be the same as today? This whole session should be the same? I feel bad that Pankaj has to stay up till 10:45. Yeah, so I think it's better to make it earlier, isn't it? For me, anything is fine. I can change tomorrow. Oh, I see. Okay. 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 Yeah. Okay. 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 Okay, she'll be here in about 6 or 7 hours. She's not here right now. Okay, everybody, see you tomorrow. Panchakopachuvyastakudasanubhyavichabhadidhanampavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo and ebhyo namo namaha. Hare Krishna.
Uh-oh.
Could you understand all that English? You could understand all that English?
Okay. I think shut off.
Oh, you just arrived?
No.